we left off with the Fourier series. We've looked at the Fourier series already. This is now a slide we're going to now determine how to figure. So we've already talked about representing periodic signals. In fact, we can represent any periodic signal with a sum of harmonically related sinusoids. And we know that we've already talked about the Fourier synthesis formula, and now we can talk about how to actually, an algorithmic way to compute these coefficients A sub k. Okay, so for the so we've already used this quite a bit already. We didn't even use it in homework. We just didn't have a way to calculate explicitly through integration these A sub k terms. We could just expand cosines and sines in terms of their complex sinusoidal representation, and then the A sub k's kind of fell out of that. We didn't, you know, use another way to do it. So now we're talking about more an algorithmic way to do that. So again, capital T sub naught is the fundamental period of our periodic signal. F naught is a fundamental frequency. It's just the 1 over the fundamental period. And the harmonic frequencies we're going to use is an integer multiple of the fundamental frequency. Now, k is an integer, but k can be negative, can be positive, can be 0. Right? So k can be any integer value. The full Fourier series synthesis requires an infinite number of terms. I mean, they're countable, which means that if I start counting 0, 1, 2, 3, right, I count long enough, in the limit, I can get to infinity. It's something I can count, but it's still infinite. It's a lot. Now, in the examples we've done so far, we didn't need an infinite number. We needed some finite number. In the vowel synthesis, we needed 6 or 7 frequencies that we did last time. We've done all kinds of it. In the tune-up, we did modulation, right, cosine of 440 hertz times the cosine of 220, and we got out what frequencies on the tune-up? So I did what frequencies resulted from that?
220, 660.
Yes, 660 and 220. So it's the sum and the difference of the frequencies. And we can get that by going to a phasor form for the two cosines, the inverse Euler formula. Write it as a sum of e to the j theta plus e to the minus j theta for each cosine, multiply out the terms. That saves us from having to memorize or look up trigonometric formulas. We can just do it with phasors. So phasors makes it really easy. Now, the tune-up Tuesday was homework problem 4A on the homework set. So we did the MATLAB code for that. So now all I have to do is do B and C. The MATLAB code's the same. Same approach. So you've done essentially problem 4, the MATLAB code. Now you have to write up an interpretation of what you see and hear. The MATLAB code should be pretty much done. To the tune-up, because we did the tune-up. All right. Now, there are some special cases that are kind of interesting. So if you look at this formula, it's possible that x of t is complex value. There are such things. We do, in certain cases, communication systems is one of them, that we talk about x of t could be complex value. Okay, what we actually transmit would be the real and imaginary separately. But mathematically, we think it was complex value. We talked about other complex value examples earlier, right? Reactive power and all kinds of things. So having complex value time domain signals is a little unusual right now, but it's going to become more and more common as you go through your coursework and possibly in work as well. Now remember, this is a theoretical or mathematical representation is complex value. How we implement it could be different, but the theory is kind of nice. Now, there's some special cases that right now have been actually the norm. So I show this as a special case, but that's all we've done so far, is the case that x of t is real value. And that's what we're most familiar with, like the tune-up from Tuesday. So now we have x of t as some constant value, A naught, so this is the average value over one period. It's a DC offset, lots of ways to think about it. Plus some sum, and still infinite sum, but now, because in the special case that these Fourier coefficients, A sub k, are complex conjugate, which means if I conjugate A sub k, you know, if it's in Cartesian form, I do what? Take the imaginary value and negate it. Okay. If it's in polar form, what do I do? I negate something.
I always just put it to Cartesian.
Oh, with a Cartesian negate, that's fine. That's another way to do it. So if you're into it, if you're in polar form, you can convert to Cartesian, negate the imaginary component. Or if you're in polar form, you can just negate the phase. So either way, it all works. So in the case that if I have, for every a sub k, if I take the complex conjugate of that, and that gives me the same value of a sub k, a sub negative k, it means that I can collapse things down to a cosine. And this may not be that much of a, I mean, maybe a surprise to see it in this form, but you're used to the inverse Euler formula here. All right, so I can write the cosine out as e to the j 2 pi 440 t plus e to the minus j 2 pi 440 t. Right, and so, and then I can do the phasor representation of cosine of 2 pi 220. Oh, I missed the halves. Oh. So you look at the coefficient here in front of these two terms. So I have this would be an a sub k and a of minus k. And they are complex conjugate, right? So 1/2 the phase is 0, and 1/2 the phase is 0. Right? So I can write, and 1/2 is the same as 1/2 e to the j0, right? Because e to the j0 is just 1. So magnitude phase form, I have magnitude of 1/2 phase of 0. I negate the phase, and I've still got 1/2, right? So, or I can think of it in Cartesian form. I can think of 1/2 as being 1/2 plus j0. So if I negate the imaginary term, I'm still back to 1/2. So if I'm real valued and I take the complex conjugate, I'm still back to the same real number or real value that I started with. Okay, so we're used to seeing this kind of complex conjugate symmetry already. Okay, so now more generally, if this holds, then what's nice is we can collapse back these terms, if this term is a complex conjugate of this term, then we can collapse it down to a cosine, which is nice. So now this is the form that we've been using. This is the more common, this has been the only case that we've really looked at in any great detail. So again, we've got harmonically related frequencies, k times f naught. Each term could have a phase that's different in principle, and then we have these Fourier coefficients, a sub k. Okay, so next step is to figure out how to find these a sub k terms, and I'll give the derivation on the board. But let's go ahead and, it's a review, but it's always a mystery of where it came from. It was kind of nice for me to do. It's been a while since I did the derivation. So now, the formula we had last slide was, given the a sub k, f sub k, and phi of k, how do we synthesize the signal? Okay, this is the synthesis formula. So you already, in this case, you already know these values, right?
Why is a sub k in the last formula, why is it capitalized?
Okay, so this is a switch. So this is, there is a connection, so if you notice that I've got both little a sub k's and capital A sub k's, and they're connected. right? So the little a sub k is the general form using complex sinusoids, x of t here. So again, we're slide 3-7. So in the special case where the Fourier coefficients are complex conjugates of each other, then I collapse down to here. So that means if a sub k is 1/2 capital A sub k times e to the j phi of k, the complex conjugate of that is to negate the phase. So so that's a synthesis, and do a demo of that as well today. So it's amazing how few terms we need in some cases. We don't need an infinite number to get a good approximation to the periodic signal. If we want an exact representation of the periodic signal, in some cases we do need an infinite number of coefficients. So we'll look at some examples in a bit. All right, so that's the synthesis side. The analysis side is, well, if I'm given the periodic signal x of t, how do I even compute these Fourier coefficients to begin with? What do I do? Okay, now this formula seems to drop out of nowhere, so we'll derive it. Okay, so it's going to come down to integrating over one fundamental period of this periodic signal x of t multiplied against a complex sinusoid. Now what this is going to actually do is by integrating, it's very similar to a vector dot product. It is the continuous time function equivalent of a vector dot product. So what you're trying to do is project x of t onto this other signal complex. It's a complex sinusoid. Okay, so we'll continue a little bit before the derivation. So so I got some integration to do. To find a sub k, the easiest term to find is a naught. Okay, so a naught means let the index k be zero, and that means in the integration, e to the minus j 2 pi k f naught t, well, that just becomes one if k is zero. And now I'm left with integrating to get a naught. Again, slide 3-8, we're going to be integrating from over one period our periodic waveform. And all that means all I need is the average value. So in many cases, you don't have to do any math. You can look at the plot and eyeball what the average value is. Sometimes it's zero, which is really easy to calculate. So for example, if I let x of t just be a cosine 2 pi f naught t, what's a naught? Zero, right? The average value of a cosine over one period is zero. It's as positive as often as it's negative. What about cosine squared? We've talked about this quite a bit. So now I have cosine squared, 2 pi f 1 of t, what's a naught? Can't be zero anymore, right? Because now all the values of cosine squared are between 0 and 1. It's a half. Okay. A few ways we can get there. You can do it through phasors. And you can do it through trig formulas. Either way. Right? We did this quite a bit earlier in the squaring block in earlier slides. So this becomes 1/2 plus cosine, 1/2 plus 1/2 cosine times 2 pi f 1. So when I square something, it's cosine squared of theta, I get a DC offset of 1/2 plus 1/2 cosine times twice whatever's in the theta or the argument, the angle. So I get 2 pi times 2 f1. And again, you'll see this on homework 4. 4b is a squaring block, and I think 4c is a cubing of a cosine. Now, if you plot this, it's a little harder to eyeball. But, I mean, you could eyeball. You might get it right just from looking at cosine squared as a plot. You might not be able to eyeball that just fine. Okay, let's go ahead and derive this, and this is going to be a few lines to get there. Derive this formula for a sub k. And I'm going to need both of these boards to do it, so to make sure we're good on getting rid of this one, I'll start on the left one.
Do you need to memorize the
No. We don't choose no memorization in this class. But you should understand it, and you should be able to find it if you need it. Now on a test, am I going to ask you to re-derive this? Probably not. So, but if it's open book anyway, it's on page 49. That's what we're processing first. So. You look up in the table of contents and you're, you know, bam, you know, two steps and you're there. Now on a test, you can reference pages in the book, equation numbers and stuff. But if you reference a page number, you got to tell me what information on the page you're referencing. There's a lot of stuff on a page. So quote what you need, and then give me a page number. Okay. Now with an open book, open note test, is it to your advantage to cram the night before and memorize?
No.
So what is the best thing to do the night before? Yeah, sleep. Full night, normal sleep, whatever that means for you. Okay? Normal eating, exercise, whatever it is, because you're going to have to be thinking on these. Because now it's not about what you memorize, it's about how you're connecting things. And if you're sleepy, you know, those connections are not going to be as fast. So the best thing to do is be ready with lots of, you know, whatever the normal amount of sleep, eating, exercise, etc. All right, so let's start from the Fourier series formula, the Fourier series synthesis. So that's starting point one. So it's, that's what we had on the slides earlier. So I have x of t is some sum. Okay, now the next step we're going to do is because remember we want to isolate in the end a sub k, which isn't isolated for us here. So it's a little work to get there to get it isolated. Because in the synthesis is fine. The synthesis says, well, I already know a sub k and I know what k, you know, I know what t naught is and all that. Okay, fine. So now we need to work the other way to get this right. So what we can do is you can multiply both sides, and this really is the conjugate of this e to the j 2 pi over capital T naught kt. Oh, I need a I'm going to change the sub this the we go from instead of little k I'm going to go for l, so it's also an integer. Third question.
Why is it not k?
Because what we want to do is we're gonna you'll see this in the end that we're gonna get a formula in terms of a sub l. So we're gonna see how the two relate. It will nicely isolate what we need for us. Now remember, we're going to multiply both sides by e to the minus j 2 pi over capital T naught times little l times t, and integrate over one period. Now when you do these integrations in practice, it can be any period. So right now, yeah, we're integrating, if you notice the formula, you integrate 0 to t naught, but you can integrate minus half t naught to half t naught. So as long as you're integrating over capital T naught seconds, it really doesn't matter where you start and end, as long as the extent in the time domain, the duration is equal to the fundamental period, capital T naught. So I can integrate from you know, minus 1/4 t naught to 3/4 t naught. I mean, I can do anything I want. Don't be constrained, because in some cases it's a lot easier not to sort at zero. For the derivation, it's fine. Okay, so the first thing, so I want to multiply both sides by, let's shift to the next board of this. All right, so we're going to take x of t and multiply by and we're going to integrate, and that's going to be done on both sides. So I've done the multiplication on both sides, and I can, it's a, what I wrote is the same thing as what I'm going to rewrite here. Okay, so I have 2 pi over t naught, capital T naught, LT. And now I want to integrate it over one period. Again, for, I'll put this down at the bottom. So for reference, this is signal processing, first page 49. Okay, now it looks like things are worse than we started, but things will get better. Now, so the way things are going to get better is that we can notice that we're integrating with respect to time. So the summation here with a sub k can be swapped or interchanged with the integration here. So that's kind of step one. Okay, so we're getting there. Okay, so that's good. So we're kind of slowly getting to an isolation of a sub k. Our next step is we can combine these two terms. I'm multiplying by two exponentials, same base, which is e, and I can just do what to the exponents?
Add
them up. Okay, now this looks like things are a little rough here, but the good news is we can simplify down this integral. Okay, so the first, there are two cases we want to look at to get the simplification. So we're going to take this integral, we're going to handle two cases. The first is when k is equal to L. So now the integral is simply 0 to capital T naught. Now, remember, k is equal to L. So that means 0. K minus L is 0. E to the J0 is 1. And if you're, and if that ever kind of throws you, you can always do Euler's form on this. So e to the j anything, right, is cosine theta plus j sine theta. And so if theta is 0, right, then we get 1 and 0. So 1 in the real component and 0 in the imaginary component. Well, that's what you can get there. So that means I'm going to be integrating 1 times dt over the interval from 0 to capital T naught. So the answer is capital T naught. Okay. The next case is a little more involved. Get a little bit more room, just keep going here. So here k is not equal to l. So I'm going to let another integer be the difference of k and l. So I'm going to let little m be k minus l. So let me move this up. Okay, so let's go ahead and write that out. So now I get the integral of e to the j 2 pi over capital T naught times little m times t dt. So I'm integrating e to the x basically here, right? Inversion of e to the x, dx. So I get the integral back e to the j, the 2 pi over capital T naught mt, and the denominator j 2 pi over capital T naught times little m. And that my limits of integration are from 0 to T naught. I left it, this is going to simplify down very nicely for us. So I get e to the j 2 pi over capital T naught times little m times capital T naught minus what happens when I plug in 0 for T? Get 1. And the denominator is just a constant with respect to time. Okay, now what happens to this term, e to the j 2 pi over capital T naught? When T naughts here are going to cancel. And little m is an integer. So what is e to the j 2 pi times an integer? I'm hearing it somewhere. Again, think about Euler's formula. So j 2 pi times an integer. So j times 2 pi times an integer, little m. So my theta is 2 pi times little m. So cosine of an integer multiple of 2 pi is 1. And a sine of an integer multiple of 2 pi is 0. So I get 1 minus 1 over the rest, j 2 pi over t naught. Times m. So my answer is 0. All that work, and it's 0. From a vector point of view, what this means is that a complex sinusoid that's e to the j 2 pi over t naught times kt is orthogonal to a complex exponential that's e to the j 2 pi over capital T naught times l times t, provided k and t are different, actually orthogonal to each other. So that simplifies, now we go back to this last line here, the derivation, and now the integral simplifies nicely. So the only, remember, we're summing over all possible values of k, from minus infinity to infinity of ak times this integral. So the only value this integral has, it's not zero, is when what happens? When k is equal to L. That's it. So this whole summation collapses down. To the product of a sub L times capital T naught. So now, take a breath. And now let's go back to what we, you know, are we where we need to be? Yeah, so we can divide both sides by capital T naught. And we get our analysis formula. So let's take that up here. Or we can take it actually this way. So we go this way with it. And this is AL is 1 over T naught times the integral of 0 to T naught times x of t e to the minus j 2 pi over T naught times L t dt. Okay, so a long way to go. But this gives us the analysis formula for the Fourier series. So now if I know what x of t is, well, it's periodic. The fundamental period is capital T naught. I now know how to proceed if I don't know any more information about x of t, I now have an algorithm to find the Fourier coefficients, a sub L. And you can replace little l with k, and we're back to a sub k, whatever you want to do on the subscript. Sometimes, again, we don't need to necessarily go through all this effort. We can eyeball it sometimes. Or write it out in phasor notation, and we don't have to do any integration at all. If none of that works, then we have a fallback algorithm to do that. Okay, so let's do some examples, and we'll have a demo. So this is homework 4. C. Cosine squared. Cosine cubed, sorry. Cosine cubed. So slide 3-9. Cosine cubed. And, you know, we could do it a couple ways. You could explicitly try to compute the Fourier coefficients a sub k just through the analysis formula and just integrate x of t against e to the minus j 2 pi k f naught t. You could. And you probably get there eventually. Or you can expand, since we already know we're starting with the cosine anyway, we can expand the cosine into its inverse Euler formula. So we can take the cosine cube, so we get the cosine of 3 pi t, expand that into phasor form. So e to the j 3 pi t plus e to the minus j 3 pi t divided by 2. And take that and cube it. And just work out what happens. So we cube these things out, go through some algebra to get there, simplify, and what we're left with is two frequencies. 3 pi and 9 pi. So 3 pi is what we started with, and 9 pi is what we get extra after cubing. So that's going to be on homework, and then you'll play it out as an audio signal to hear it. and the plot of cosine cubed is upper right, and you can see it's periodic. And you can even eyeball a period out of that. It's kind of given away with all the math here now, but if you eyeball cosine cubed, what's the average value over one period? Zero, right? And that kind of makes sense, because x cubed, if x is negative, well, x cubed is negative. And if x is positive, and x cubed is positive, so that kind of keeps the fact that we have where we're positive as often as we're negative. Okay, so a few other things we can keep going, one of the things we talked about is we can now plot the spectrum. So I know from, you know, x of t, I have a fundamental frequency, right? This is 3 pi in radians per second, so divide through by 2 pi to get frequency in hertz. And so the fundamental frequency of 1.5 hertz and 4.5 hertz, 1.5 hertz. So we can plot this as well. So here's our spectrum. So if you look at the coefficients here in front of the different complex sinusoidal terms, I have for frequency f naught, I have a strength of 3/8. For frequency 3 times f naught, which is 4.5 hertz, I have 1/8. And then you'll see this the symmetry here, which is nice. I get 3/8 and 1/8 on the negative frequency. Okay, you were also asked on homework for this one, and I think I'll do the demo first on this one. Okay, so in DSP first, so slide 3-10. So in DSP first, on the website, so our signal processing first website, which is dspfirst.jivetech.edu, there's a lot of MATLAB code and also videos that have been edited. Both are there. So this is the Fourier series demo from that website. And I'm just going to run it now. Okay, so on this demo, you have lots of options. So the one that we're about to talk about is the square wave with 50% duty cycle. So 50% of the time it's on, quote unquote, and 50% of the time it's off. Now this particular square wave it's either 1 or minus 1. Another way to do square wave is off is 0 and on is 1. Those are both ways to do it. Okay, so what we'd like to do is then start increasing the number of Fourier coefficients we use to represent this. It's periodic. And if I had to write, and you will in homework, if you have to write MATLAB code to represent square wave, a couple ways you can do it. And notice this has a fundamental period. So it looks a lot like, this particular plot looks a lot like what, cosine or sine? Cosine, right? So at the origin it's 1, then you get a 0 crossing. So a kind of neat way to represent this, or write MATLAB code for this, or Python, it doesn't matter, is to notice that this looks a lot like a cosine, except that I'm only allowing values of 1 and minus 1. Okay, so there's a built-in command. Does that sound familiar? Is there something out there in the world that you give it a value and you get out 1 if it's positive and minus 1 if it's negative and maybe 0 if it's 0? Does that sound like something you've seen before? Logic gates, right. But there's a name for that. Right, it's logic gates. There's a name for this. Right, so think about a function x. I have 1 of 3 values. I have 1 if x is greater than 0. I have minus 1 if x is less than 0. And what happens at 0, you know, certainly could be you may not have a third case, but let's just go ahead and have a third case. Okay. It looks familiar. Remember the name of this? It is a piecewise function. Absolutely, it's piecewise. Well, what's the name of that? I heard it.
Sine.
It's a sine function. So I have it. So all I'm really trying to gather from x, what's the sine? S-I-G-N. So this is just the sine. It's also known as signum. It's a fancier word of saying it. So this is the sine, which is also built into MATLAB. So in order to generate the square wave, what I can do is generate a cosine at the fundamental frequency of the square wave, and then apply the sine, S-I-G-N, to it. One line of MATLAB code. Once I've defined, T naught and all the things I have to define, the sampling rate and all that. One line of MATLAB code, right? It's S-I-G-N, and x would be the cosine 2 pi f naught t, where f naught is the fundamental frequency. And now I've just generated the square wave very quickly. All right, so let's go ahead and add some Fourier components together. So this is a little bit of a tougher signal, as you're going to maybe have already experienced in other classes. So right now there are no Fourier coefficients. What's the average value?
Zero.
Okay, so the first coefficient will be zero. And I think that's the red that's showing up here. So again, I have the original signal, and the synthesized signal's in red. Right now we have, so now I have, I do, well, let me do one. Okay, let me do one. All right, so here's the first coefficient. This is to fit the original signal with one cosine. That's it. It's cosine at one frequency, which would be equal to what frequency is this cosine at? It's true. There is a numeric value. Sure. But in terms of the frequencies we have up here in the Fourier formula would be, or it's just the fundamental, right? So whatever the fundamental frequency is, which has a numeric value. So now we have two coefficients, not much has changed, nothing changed. So that coefficient must be zero. It's interesting. Next one up, it's odd. Okay, it's three. So now I've got two cosines, f naught and three times f naught. It's getting better. Approximation is getting better. I go to four. Nothing changed, so that coefficient must be zero. Then here's five. Now I get a sum of three cosines, f naught, three f naught, and five f naught. Getting better, but I'm still not. Can do better. And I can keep going. And what will happen on this one is that no matter how many terms that I use, as long as it's finite, I still can't quite capture that discontinuity that happens every half a period when I go from minus 1 to 1, and the other half a period I go from, so I go 1 to minus 1, and the other discontinuities are from minus 1 to 1. I just can't capture those unless I have an infinite number of terms. So that's a difficult one to get. So there's always some error that's significant because of the discontinuity. So when I pick another signal, where this is not a problem, go back to having zero coefficients. So if I use a triangular wave, okay, now if you notice here, there is no discontinuity in amplitude, but there is certainly discontinuity in derivative as I hit these peaks and valleys. But in terms of amplitude, I don't have a discontinuity. It's kind of nice. So now, what's the average value? Zero. Okay. First coefficient up. It's not bad. Just with one cosine. Not bad. Okay. Next term, not much changed. Let's go back one to see if there was any change. I don't see any change from one to two. So to three, pretty good. Three terms. So f naught and three times f naught. Here's five terms. I'm almost there. I mean, visually, pretty soon I won't be able to tell the difference. Here's seven terms. See a little bit of mess here in the peaks, valleys. Let's go to 9, 11, 13. Looking pretty good. And if you look down here, this is the plot of the coefficient values in magnitude and phase that are being computed. And you'll notice that the even terms are zeroed out. And they also are decaying quickly as they go to higher and higher harmonics. So it means that if I were to build a signal generator, piece of lab equipment, I could probably pull it off with maybe 5, or I could do it with 3 cosines, F naught, 3F naught, and 5F naught. Maybe I add another one at 7F naught. And that's my triangular waveform. Okay, there are other examples in here. So I'll give you one more. So let's do a full rectified cosine. So it's cosine absolute value. The average value is 1/2. Previous discussion. So our increase in the Fourier series coefficients, which are guessed, we're going to have a problem meeting the peaks and valleys. We'll get there. So yeah, no. The nice thing is, again, the amplitude doesn't have discontinuity the derivatives do at those peaks and valleys. But yeah, we can split it up. This is just 15 coefficients. We're pretty much covering this rectified, full-wave rectified cosine. And again, you look at the Fourier coefficients, and they get really small really fast. All right, so let's go ahead and do the math on this one. All right, so we've got a 50% duty cycle, square wave, one of your homework problems tomorrow. And this is, I can define it. So I get half the time. Now here I'm saying on is 1 and off is 0. Slightly different than the demo, which had 1 was on and minus 1 was off. So you can slide 3-10. Now the good news is we can eyeball the, in this case you eyeball the a not term, because the average value is 1/2. It's 1/2 the time and 0/2 the time. The rest, we have to do a little more work to get a closed form answer for that. But it's very similar to what we had done in the derivation for the Fourier analysis formula. So again, I apply the Fourier analysis formula directly. So a sub k is 1 over t naught times the integral over 1 period times our square wave over 1 period times e to the minus j 2 pi k f naught t. And I'm only on half the time, off half the time, so I only have to integrate now over half the period from 0 to 1/2 capital T naught, because from 1/2 capital T naught to T naught, and my x of t is just 0. Does not contribute to the integration here. So now I do the same thing as before, I integrate e to the j 2 pi k f naught t, as we did in the derivation, and very similar story, e to the minus j 2 pi k f naught t in the numerator, denominator is minus 2 to j 2 pi k f naught, and I integrate from 0 to 1/2 capital T naught. And again, we don't need to use this formula for k equals 0, because we've already figured out what the Fourier coefficient is when k is 0, which is 1/2. So in these kind of problems, you can get pretty far along with eyeballing things. You get one coefficient, should be solid, usually from eyeballing. And you can always use the eyeball value to double check the math, of course. Right, so here's for k is not equal to 0, and the reason that that's an issue here is that k is in the denominator. So k of 0 would cause us some grief here. All right, so k is not 0. Just work through replacing the upper and lower limits of integration. And we end up with something that's kind of collapses kind of nicely for us. And what's important here in the analysis formula is that the Fourier coefficient a sub k is inversely proportional to k. So as k increases, a sub k will decrease. Right?
How do you know the upper and lower limits of the integral?
Yeah, so in this case, we always want to integrate over 1 period, which is from 0 to capital T naught. And if you look at what x of t looks like over one period, which again starts at zero and ends at capital T naught. So for the first half of the period, the amplitude is one. And the second half of the period, the amplitude is zero. So if I integrate from minus half T naught to T naught, I just zero. So I have to worry about it. So just simplifying the limits of integration. Okay, now the numerator is kind of interesting, right? The numerator, the denominator we kind of get, where, you know, the Fourier coefficient is inversely proportional to the index k. The numerator is kind of interesting because I have 1 minus the quantity minus 1 to the k. So what happens when k is 1? What do we get here in the numerator? 2. Now what happens when k is 2? I get 0. So what about k is 4? 0. So the even terms go to 0. All right, now there's a little more of a trick to this. Now you can get that from inspection. So let's talk about how to do that. So I look at the square wave, and the way I've drawn it, the way I've defined it, is that this part looks a lot like the cosine. Okay, so that kind of gives us some. Let me slow down on this one. It's a little more complicated than that. So let me, okay, so if I draw it, if I think about a square wave, and I, instead of starting at zero, find a, so let's do a different square wave that starts, it's centered at zero, 50% duty cycle. It's a slightly different issue than I'm asking for here. So let's reset and ignore that last question. I want to ask you now about this one. If I look at how to fit this, I've got what kind of symmetry about the origin? Even. And so the cosine is even and the sine is odd. So what will happen here is I can fit this x of t only with cosines, different harmonics. I don't need the sines because I'm even symmetry. So let's go ahead, and this is now, again, right out of the... So determining whether or not half the coefficients go to zero, I don't have a quick way to eyeball that one. Then I don't have an easy idea on that one. But I do have an idea, so I have an idea on how to know that half the coefficients will be zero. But there is another way to know what's going to fit. Do I need both cosines and sines? It has to do with symmetry of the periodic signal. So if I have even symmetry, I just need cosines. If I have odd symmetry, I just need sines. And if my symmetry is neither odd nor even, then I don't have symmetry, then I need both. That's another insight in all of this. Okay, so let's talk about more about the square wave. So you notice the Fourier coefficients that we get from the formula here, there's nothing here that has to do with capital T naught anymore. It's gone. So it's kind of interesting that these coefficients are not dependent upon the fundamental period, capital T naught. Okay, so here's an example from the book. Okay, so here's from the slide deck that comes with the book. So here is a example. We have one period of the pulse train, rectangular pulse train. So it's 0.2, so the periodicity here is 0.04, 50% duty cycle. So the fundamental frequency, so if the fundamental period is 0.04 seconds, invert that to get the fundamental frequency of 25 hertz. And this is something you could hear if, this, if your sound system can play it down there. It's possible that you can hear this one. The coefficients for the square wave, we just computed on the previous slide, are up shown up there, a sub k. So we have a sub 0 and then the odd terms otherwise. And we can plot the spectrum for this, and you'll see the decay in their values as inversely proportional to the index. And not explicitly shown, but you'll have zero values at 50 hertz, 100, 150, and so forth. So the even terms are zeroed out. Okay, so now I've already shown you the demo for this. But we can now talk more about what you saw in the demo. So we can synthesize a square wave as accurately with a finite number of terms for the Fourier synthesis formula. We're always going to have error. We're not going to be able to capture those discontinuities exactly. There's always some miss at those points of discontinuity. So again, if I want to take a finite number of terms, then what I'm doing, these are all the possible Fourier coefficients, I could just keep some number of them for my synthesis. That was the demo, that's what the demo was doing. So here I can take, well, I'm just going to take up to the seventh harmonic. And I know harmonic is often used differently. By this we mean seven times the fundamental frequency. So 7F naught. So if I keep seven terms that are not zero, this looks like more than, this looks like nine. Plot, it's supposed to be seven. One more than I should have. Oh, up to the seventh harmonic. That's correct. Right? So up to the seventh harmonic is seven times 25. So we're good, 175. So we're going to keep nine terms in total up to the seventh harmonic. Okay, and you saw from the demo, we got closer as we added more and more coefficients for part of the waveform, but we never got really much improvement on the discontinuity. And there is a phenomenon called Gibbs phenomenon that we will always miss at this discontinuity, and the miss is about 8% of the discontinuity. So we'll never do better than that with finite number of terms. We need an infinite number of terms to exactly represent a discontinuity in the amplitude. So you can keep as many terms as you want to get a little more accuracy in some parts of the square wave, but we're never going to get any better than 8% miss in the point of amplitude discontinuity. The demo is the one I did. This is the Fourier series demo. Okay, so kind of put this in a couple different ways we can look at the Fourier series. We can look at it as given a periodic signal x of t, can I break it down into its fundamental or harmonic components? And I can do that through the analysis formula to get a sub k. In there is going to have magnitude and phase information for our coefficient. And the frequencies are going to be integer multiples of the fundamental frequency f naught. Flip side is, if I know the Fourier series coefficients, and I mean for the fundamental frequency f naught, I can then choose to keep a finite number to approximate the periodic signal. And we also tried to do this with a vowel sound that was ah, and it didn't go very well. Okay, so there's some situations that, this model doesn't work all that well. And the reason the speech signal didn't work all that well is the spectral lines were not exactly harmonically related. They're slightly off from harmonically related. So the forma didn't quite do the right thing. Didn't match the actual waveform very well. Okay, and so the Fourier series also gives us some insight into what happens in the frequency domain or spectrum, that now we can, we have a different representation, sometimes much more sparse, but equally meaningful, right? So if I have cosine cubed, I get four Fourier coefficients out of that, and I'm representing what happens in the frequency domain. Here is a case where we've got an infinite number of Fourier coefficients to exactly represent the square wave, and then in practice, I might keep a finite number, and I'm going to lose something, right? So I'm throwing away lots of coefficients in the spectrum, and it also is going to mean that I don't capture, I may not capture the periodicity, or sorry, the amplitude discontinuities exactly, which I don't hear. Okay, so two sides of this coin, the Fourier series, you're given all the information you need. It's a matter of a for loop to do the summation and add a constant. So the synthesis is fairly straightforward algorithmically. Fourier analysis can be pretty tough for measuring signals because, like we saw with the recorded speech segment for ah, it's not quite the structure it has. It's close. Vowel sounds are very close to being harmonic or periodic with harmonics, very thin spectral lines that are approximately related by k times f naught. And we use this fact in speech compression. We use this fact in speech recognition. But representing it exactly as a Fourier series is a little bit too restrictive. So there, we'll talk about other frequency approaches later, with a continuous time Fourier transform and a discrete time Fourier transform is coming later. That's more general. Can handle both periodic and non-periodic signals in the same approach. Again, so Fourier series is really good for periodic signals, breaking them down into harmonics. Okay, I want to go ahead and go on to lecture four slides in the remaining few minutes. Okay, so lecture four slides. What we've been talking about so far up until now has been representing Fourier synthesis of periodic waveforms. So slide 4-2. Here's a finite sum of harmonically related cosines. And as we mentioned, that doesn't always, so a couple things that are buried in the synthesis. One is that we're assuming that the parameters don't change with time. That is to say, the harmonic structure F naught, 2F naught, 3F naught, etc. The Fourier coefficients, which includes the phase, do not change with time. Now that doesn't make any sense, right? If I have even the vowel sound ah wasn't very well modeled using this, but now if I change vowel sounds ah, e, o, whatever, each of those has a different set of Fourier coefficients, possible different harmonic structure. So this is pretty limited. Fourier series is wonderful if the periodic signal remain, all the parameters of the periodicity doesn't change. Don't change with time. So F naught stays the same, and everything else stays the same. Forever, for all time. So that's a kind of, so here's an example of that kind of signal, right? Here's a sum of three cosines, harmonically related. And what are the frequencies here? We've got, what's F naught here? Your 20 pi, that'd be radians per second, but F naught in hertz would be 10. Right? So we have 10, 30, and 50. It also turns out that there are non-periodic signals that are out there, and they look, you know, they can look pretty similar in form, but they're not periodic. So the book talks about this too. So here is a sum of three cosines. And the frequencies are similar, starting with 10, so a 10 hertz cosine. And this is how many hertz? 10 times square root of 8. Okay, so it's not, you know, what was the one above? Well, 10 times the square root of 9 was the one above, 10 times 3. This is slightly off, 30 hertz, slightly less. Next frequency is 10 times the square root of 27. So that's a little bit, you know, greater than 10 times the square root of 25. So these are not, this second example is not periodic. And the Fourier series isn't going to, not the harmonically related Fourier series. This is not periodic, so it's not going to, we will not get a good answer trying to apply Fourier analysis to this. We're going to miss at the two frequencies that are not harmonically related to the same. So that means that we want to synthesize a waveform. And Buck talks about it. These are figures right from the book. So again, the one on the left is the sum of the three cosine waves of harmonic frequency, the first equation we had. So it's 10 hertz, 30, and 50. The one on the right is the second equation, where I had 10 hertz plus 10 times square root of 8 and 10 times the square root of 27 hertz. So not periodic, even though it has pretty much the same structure. But again, not harmonically related frequency bands. So again, we've been assuming the spectrum, a set of amplitudes, frequencies, and phases, does not change with time. Okay, now we get back to the question I asked you a long time ago, which is, what is 440 hertz? It's an A, and in which octave? I said, well, hold on to that. So now we can talk about it. Okay, I'm not a musician, really enjoy what musicians play and whatever. So here's the piano, 88 key piano. There are different versions, of course. Here's the 88 key. So we start with the lowest note, far left, 27 and a half hertz, as a tone. It can be also harmonics, so with more than that, but this is the note. And the rightmost key is at 4186 hertz. Remember, we can hear, normal hearing goes up to 20 kilohertz, so there's lots of extra frequencies above this, 4186. The middle C, now I've numbered the octaves, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and this is as good as the Wikipedia information is, which is not bad these days. So the middle C is at kind of odd, 262 hertz. This is in the fourth octave, C4. And the A at 440 is in the fourth octave, if we number the octaves this way. So depends how you number things. So this is A4. Each octave has 12 keys, and so the A in the octave higher is twice the frequency. So the A in octave 5 would be at 880, and octave 6 would be 1760. Now sheet music is kind of interesting, so we'll try to do our best at interpreting sheet music here, and in the back of your mind, kind of think what tune this is. Give you a hint, it's a familiar one. Okay, so the sheet music is an interesting story because it tells you what frequencies are going to get played at different points in time. So the frequency information varies with time. So time is going to be on the horizontal axis, and the frequency information will be on the vertical. So here are some notes, Western scale. Treble clef, right, so the middle line is B, and this line is G, bottom line is Z, and so forth. Okay, and then the white space in between the lines would be the notes in between. Right? So between B and D, we have C. Okay, now we can have sharps and flats, right, so that's the black keys on the piano, representing the sharp or flat. So that's an F sharp. So again, we have frequency on the vertical. Okay, that's nice. So this is B. I'm not sure which B is. I don't know which B is. B4. Any musician here?
B4.
So this is B4. In treble. Okay. And the next step is to tell, well, how am I going to interpret the time axis, which is the horizontal. So I'll have a musician take this for me, because you'll do much way better. So 6/8 time, it'd be 8 beans. 8 notes per measure. And the 6 beans?
There's six distinct counts.
In one measure?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is an odd time signature. I wanted this piece of music, and that's what I got. So, all right, so we got each measure. Now, this will tell us as we go forward in time. So, how many beats? So, this is a quarter note with half longer, right? So, how many beats would this be? That's 6, 8, 9, 3 beats. And this is a hold. And so, I get 3 beats plus 2, 5. Okay. Musician, you may be able to pick up this tune. You got it?
It's the Isaac's Egg.
Very good, man. You're awesome. Okay. All right. So time is on this axis. Eyes of Texas. So yeah, we're good. So in this case, you know, each of these is representing some tone, some cosine or sine, some sinusoidal signal, but the spectral information is changing with time. So the Fourier series would not work directly on this. Okay, but we can say, well, in short pieces, so over this amount of time, the spectrum is not changing. At least not in theory. This is it. This is the note we're playing. Now the musician, of course, will add some style to it, and there will be more to it. But just looking at the raw technical information here, it's just a frequency value played for a certain amount of time, and the spectrum would be constant. Now, how fast notes are played depends on time signature and beats per minute, and so we will pick that up on Tuesday.